Mike, turn your games down.
Hi, we're going to episode 275 of Games My Mom Found. I am Mike Overton, and who's leveling up their weapons with me tonight?
This is Blake Anglin, and this is my favorite game on the Citadel.
this is Ron Huntone, and I'm still haunted by harpsichords.
And this is Kyle Gorman, back again. Great game to play. Excited to join.
And welcome. And where can people find you, Kyle?
Do work on the RPG show, rpgshow.com. Come check us out. Mostly JRPGs.
Yeah, just another podcast to add to people's out there plethora of podcasts. You never know. Sometimes you're just in the mood for the right kind of episode. Plus, when you have a show kind of like, because you guys kind of have a show like what I do, where you're reviewing a certain product, sometimes it's good to have a nice options, because some people I know don't want to hear what I'm talking about a particular week.
Yeah, always.
I can tell by the numbers. So, Blake, why don't you introduce what game we're talking about, since this is your favorite game of all time. So
it is indeed my favorite game of all time. We are going to be talking about the classic Super Nintendo action RPG known as Secret of Mana.
Developed and published by Square, that came out in 1993. God, this game is over 30 years old.
Woo!
Yeah.
So as I always like to start these, do the history of it. But Blake, since I know your history has already been recorded on this, but I still want to hear, what's your history with this game?
Oh man, so I do have a pretty cool story with this game. So this is one of the few games, you know, I was a big RPG fan, me and my brother both, so we would always play. And of course, RPG is not exactly known as a multiplayer genre. So getting to sit down with my brother and kind of get into an RPG was just such a cool experience back in the day. Still unrivaled, frankly, in a lot of ways. You know, this is something even to this day you don't see attempted too much. So I played it so much as a kid, and I never beat it. And then finally, you know, was able to come back in my college years and to finally finish that game up after 20 odd years of playing it and loving it and just never really being able to finish it. It was like a really, really magical experience for me.
And Kyle, what is your history with this game?
Yeah, strangely enough, pretty similar. I played this game a couple of times as a kid, liked it, didn't really have the multiplayer or the friends at the time. But then in college, met a bunch of guys, and we went to a GameStop. I mean, this is back in the early 2000s. Bought a SNES multi-tap, had three controllers, and played through the entirety of it on a Super Nintendo. Did that, played it with a couple of other friends, played it with my wife a couple of years ago. So it's one of those just absolutely unique multiplayer RPGs that is, it's, you can't find stuff like this. You really can't. It's just, it's magic, honestly.
Okay. And Ron, what about you? What is your history with Secret of Mana?
Well, with this title specifically, I actually didn't play it until around the mid-2000s. Kind of went back to it after checking out some of the later entries. So I don't quite have all of the playing it as a kid kind of memories. I never beat it. I got pretty far, and I put it away for a while until recently when I beat it. I do really enjoy it overall.
Okay. So I have a history with this game a bit. I played it back in the SNES days. One of my friends had it. We played it two players, but we never played three player. We didn't have a multi-tap, and we sucked at it. Like, I don't think we ever got that far past the Moogle Forest, which is not that early or not that late in the game. Like, I know we had Flammy at some point. I remember the dragon when I was a kid. Like, I knew there was a flying dragon in this game, but I don't think we ever got too far with the dragon. I'm pretty sure me and my friend at the time never finished it. And then years later, when I was getting out of a bad relationship and I was in a really gaming slump and I couldn't play any new games, like just nothing would click, I went back, and it was about like 9-10 years ago, and that's when I first beat Secret of Mana, and then I beat it 2 weeks ago again. But that's my history with this game. This game has almost been on the show here a couple times, but I kept taking it off the list for one reason or another. But this time it finally clicked, and I wanted it to be one of the 25 bracket episodes, because it's a nice RPG.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. I'm glad you really seem to enjoy it, too.
Oh, I got it. Playing this in the Steam Deck was fucking perfect. So, I mean, and I don't feel any bad. I bought this game twice on two different Wiis, one that my girlfriend at the time took with her when she left, and another Wii, and I never even played it, so I bought this game enough. I wasn't, like, they got my money. So I didn't feel any pain. I just played the SNES version. I thought about getting the remake, but I was just like, I want my SNES graphics.
Yeah, yeah, and they definitely have like a charm to them. It's kind of like it's similar to like Chrono Trigger, but like a little bit more detail here and there if you really look.
It's good sprite work.
It really is. I appreciated the remake.
Yeah, I think the remake gets a bit of a bad rap myself, honestly.
I just didn't really want to buy it. I don't know. I thought maybe the remake was a little bit different, but then after talking with you guys, it sounds that it's what kind of one for one of this game with a few quality of life and better graphics, obviously.
You get more conversations when you rest at the end, too. It's nice.
Okay.
Yeah, that goes a long way to really fleshing out the story and the characters that don't get a lot of, like, the main trio doesn't really get a lot of, you know, character and, like, kind of personalization in the original, and the remake really, really does a good job of trying to fix that.
That's good, because they don't even have names in the original unless you have to put in your own names or know what their names are from the internet, or maybe the instruction booklet.
Right.
Because I had no idea the main character's name was Randy, or that the girl was named
Prim.
Or Popeye?
Prim.
Prim is the Prim. Girl, Popeye is the sprite.
Well, not in my version. I had the names wrong, because I didn't look up what the name of the main character. He was just Mike Sprite. I didn't look that up either. I just called he Sprite. That was his name. And then the girl I looked up and called her the wrong name.
in my game, my boy character, his name was kind of funny, because like when the name prompt came up, I started typing, and then like I hit a wrong button. And I couldn't figure out real quick how to like backspace, so I just went with it. So my boy's name was Arpang.
You see, I realize I don't like that in RPGs. I don't like it when you don't just give me the name of the character. I'm okay if like you give me their name, then I can delete it and put my own name in, like Final Fantasy VI does, Chrono Trigger does. I don't like that I don't have a default name put in there. That bothers me. That's a me problem.
I agree with that, actually. I absolutely feel you there.
It's just because then you can't go and talk to your friends like, oh, hey, what do you think of this character? Like, who? Like, you have to just describe the character instead of just saying a name. Like, it would be stupid. Like, hey, I really like that treasure hunter guy you get in FF6 in the early Narch, right? Yeah, I think Cockballs is really cool. You know, some the idiot name people would name characters back then. Like, it's just give them the fucking name.
I mean, isn't boy, girl, and sprite enough?
It doesn't have that lasting effect to make you care about the characters enough in conversation. Like, it wasn't until last week that I even know what their names were.
So there's actually history behind that, like a reasoning why that I found out the other day. So apparently this game was on the Super Nintendo CD system that never came out. And they made it, they had too much data to be on a cartridge, so they had to drop like 30% of what the game was supposed to be, including multiple endings on Super Nintendo. Oh. And part of it was that they lost the names and like some of the other just informational data in the background because you didn't have the cartridge.
Oh, that's interesting.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
I mean, like, for me, the names that stuck with me, like, kind of going, I did go with that with the names, like, Undyne, I remembered, Salamando. Those are two names that have stuck with me all these years. And I shouldn't remember the summons versus the main characters.
One little piece of trivia that you guys may know. In the English manual, it actually called the boy Jeff, and the girl was named Karen in the manual. And that was the only indication of any sort of naming that you could get.
Yeah. I don't like that.
Jeff, Karen, and the nameless sprite is what most people would think were the real names.
That's shitty, by the way.
Kind of funny in a way, but
Jeff, Karen, and Sprite sounds like a trio on its way to Coachella.
Like a sitcom.
It's just stupid. I don't know. I mean, I also don't play this game for the story. I don't even really know what the story was, other than Mana Tree told you, gave you a sword, monsters attack village, kill monsters. Okay.
There's the big important scene later that takes all of 10 seconds where they explain that ghost you saw in the beginning was actually your dad.
And your mom is the tree.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. See, all that left me. Like, I didn't see the father part in the waterfall with the ghost because I was looking down at something else while pressing the A button.
Yeah, because when you finally like the opening of the game, because it was funny. I remember someone recently was posting about it. They're like, how do I like I'm stuck in here? And then it's like, oh yeah, to actually get to the sword is kind of a weird thing you have to do.
that the game doesn't really telegraph very well. And then it's like, and then you go there and like, there's the sword, and then there's like a ghostly image of a knight dude who coincidentally looks like the other knight guy in the game. I forget his name, who shows up everywhere.
Jima.
And like basically like really late in the game, they're like, yeah, that was your dad.
I feel like the game is missing that narrative to keep pushing you. I know there's always something going on and there's a cult and there's an empire. But for me personally, like none of that mattered. I just wanted to play the game. Like the gameplay was what sold.
Yeah. And I mean, the game doesn't like it doesn't beat you over the head with its story. It's there if you want to pay attention. But ultimately, it's like not that important in the grand scheme of playing the game. You're really more concerned about like the dancing merchants and traveling around with the cannons.
So Blake, as a guy who loves this game, what do you think of the story?
I mean, yeah, I think that pretty much nailed it. It's like I said, the remake does add some context certainly, but let's be honest, you know, it's not a strong point of the game. I mean, the overarching story itself is pretty, it's okay if pretty generic. But the game is certainly not going out of its way to really provide depth to any of these characters or a lot of context to the events going on. So I would say it's definitely more of a vehicle just to deliver, you know, the gameplay, the art, and the music, I think, are all top-notch. And they're definitely just so far ahead of what the story itself presents. So it's there. It is there if you want to dig into it. And it gives you a framework, certainly, to kind of tie all this together. Yeah. But it's not what anyone's coming for.
Okay, I was just curious what you thought.
Yeah, it does establish a lot of stuff that, like, if you play the later games, comes back a lot. But in this game itself, it's not the most important.
You see, as a kid, the only other sequel I knew of for this game was Legend of Mana, which comes out on PS1. And at the time, I was like, oh, we finally got another sequel to Secret of Mana, not realizing how big this series is.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, kind of the favorite one in the series I've played is Secret of Mana 2. Didn't officially come out until, I believe, the Switch collection, and then they did the remake of it. I could be wrong on that.
It Seek and Detsu 3 or Trials of Mana.
Yeah.
I was introduced to Seek and Detsu 3 in my first year of high school. I met a guy that introduced it to me on the ROM, and I was playing it on a Windows 95 computer.
Yep. That was kind of how I got introduced to that as well. But that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, but it relates to this. Like, this is a game that's always stuck with me. Like, I have always, and one thing that I remembered from this game from years ago when I was a kid that I really saw again as I was playing it is the boss fights are just so cool. And those sprites are just things that I want to make further beats out of, which I don't do. And put around my wall because I just like them so much.
They are pretty cool. Overall, not only look cool, but a lot of the boss fights are pretty fun to do. And that's where a lot of like the magic kind of comes into play because if you know how to use the magic system, you can fly right through them. But a lot of them just do some cool stuff because there's the one like centipede boss that goes all around the arena. There's the robot on the wheels that shows up a couple of times.
I mean, this game reuses sprites, and I was never upset about it. Like, sometimes I get upset. This game, I was never upset. I'm like, you still look cool. Even when you reuse a boss fight, like they reuse the ant that you fight in the first game, in the first beginning of the game, and they use him later on as a metal version of him, and I was like, still damn cool.
Oh, yeah. Well, and later on in the game, when it just kind of turns into a boss rush, even then when it's reusing a bunch of them, they're still pretty fun to fight.
So, Kyle, I got a funny story about our mutual friend that we both know. So when I was playing this game, an old memory was unlocked. When I first met Brad and we were talking in first year of high school and I was playing this game, I remember telling him, because we were on the phone, oh, I'm fighting fish in Secret of Mana. And he was like, why are you fighting fish? And I fought a chair. And I remember him making a comment about it and calling it stupid. And I forgot all about that until I started playing this game and I was reminded of that.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, he didn't think too highly of my Super Nintendo game when he's playing regular Xbox and PS2 games. Like, why are you playing this shit?
Exactly. But yeah, there's something about this game. Just, you know, every time it comes up, somebody mentions it. It's just like, you know what? It's another try. Just, it's so simple, but just this time. That's the only thing I could be saying it earlier, maybe, you know, I could hear this music in the background just be like, it takes right there. Have someone say, hey, you want to play one boss of Secret of Mana? And I can't really say I'd say no. It's just one of those things you can jump into so easily. There's so much fun with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's certainly very easy to just pick up and get going, get either if you're grinding for gold or gear or whatnot or leveling up stuff, easy to just pick up and either move forward or just work on gaining stats.
I did a lot of grinding in this game, and I'm normally not like, I do like grinding in video game, but I got like obsessed with the magic stats in this game. Like as throughout this game, as you play, you do get other spirits that then give you more magic, and you also, like, the whole process of the game is traveling across the world, and then you unlock the mana seeds, which give you more power, so you, then your spells can get stronger. So there's a lot of this back and forth of, okay, now it's time to chill, kill enemies, level up spells, which by leveling up spells, you have to then use them. Healing is simple, you just use them, and then go to the inn, heal up, and then, but with the sprite spells, you have to actually use them on an enemy. But it still wasn't bad. I never had an issue.
Yeah. Overall, the grinding with it wasn't too bad. But I did get to a point where I decided I was done grinding the magic because in the game there's 8 levels of magic and I had gotten the level 6 magic and I spent a couple hours grinding everything up to level 6 and then I said, okay, I'm gonna go do more of the story. And then it was like it was seriously just like 10 or 15 minutes later. I got the level 7 magic and I was going to have to grind everything up and get the new magic I got up to level 7. And I'm just like, yeah, I don't want to do that anymore. So I just then kept going forward with the game.
It's diminishing returns in terms of the grinding of the magic, really.
But man, having some of those spells maxed out when you get to the end of the game, whew, does it murder those bosses?
It's very helpful.
I did die a couple times in this game. Where I just got overpowered, and I went, okay, and I fixed it real fast. I went leveled up my magic, and then I came back, and problem was solved very quickly. Because one of my big issues with this game...
Yeah, I stayed ahead of it most of the time.
That's good, though. I mean, that's how you have to do it. But like what Ron was saying, like there is that part where you get like 3 spell level-ups pretty quickly, and it can kind of fuck... It irritated me. Like, I didn't want to just keep leveling up. I wanted to move on, but I just forced myself to just keep playing and level up.
No, I agree, and I think I ended up in the same spot as Ron, to the level or whatever was after 2 hours of grinding spells. After that, I was gone. But you really can't kind of just spam cast a lot against the bosses end game, and after level 5, you're probably set, honestly.
Yeah, that's what my guide was telling me, too. They're like, you don't need to be max level. I'm like, yes, I do. I'm like, Blake told me I should level these up.
Yeah,
magic is so strong. Like, it's so much more powerful.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And the guide I was using, said that if you max out the magic, you get special animations.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they're kind of random. It doesn't happen every time.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. So once you hit max level, essentially certain spells have a chance to have, like, a special kind of animation tied to them.
Oh.
Does it do any more damage or anything?
No. In fact, it's actually kind of a deterrent because I don't think you can chain cast it, which is like the most efficient way to do damage.
Yeah.
So it's really just kind of cool but impractical.
I didn't max out anything. I got stuff to 8, and that's where I stopped.
Well,
and I know you can level stuff to like 8.99.
Yeah, 8.99. Yeah, yeah. It's the 8.99 where you can unlock the special animations.
Yes.
I was just kind of done. Like, I told myself I was going to go to when I got to the final dungeon, I got to the Mana Fortress, I told myself I was just going to level up a bit and then leave, but then I never left and just beat the game. So, one of my big complaints with this game, and this is my complaint with any RPG, looking at you, Star Ocean, the second story, back on PS1, I don't like it when I have a low amount of items I can carry. I should be able to buy 99 of every item for no reason at all, just because I feel better. And I don't like this game limits you to 4 in the original version.
Yeah, it takes it to the extreme. And the remake averts that, which is where a lot of the difficulty is tied to, especially being able to restore your mana, you know, very efficiently with only 4 fairy walnuts is really a lot of the difficulty of the end game.
Yeah, and in fact, the MP restoring items are really the only items that end up mattering, pretty much. Aside from like the weird, like the stuff you get to like remove certain statuses, but But you get to a point where you're just like, oh yeah, those HP items don't matter. And if you're good, the revive doesn't really matter. It's just the MP items.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you get the walnuts, which heal MP. What did the Royal Jam do? I saw it once when I didn't have money, then I never saw it again until later in the game. I don't think I ever even bought it or used it.
That's a full heal.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't really need that, because like, with the Sprite, for one thing, when the Sprite gets the ability to absorb MP, he never ran out of MP for me. He was just, boom, good to go. And the girl, I just used her mostly for healing, so I was okay. But like, kind of to go back to the bosses, the two that killed me was, one, the golem that you fight when you get the gnome, and then I also died to the wall the first time you fight him in the cult place.
Oh, the wall the first time you fight that, yeah.
Because I was stupid.
Yeah, well, that fight is actually kind of fun and cool once you understand it. But yeah, the first time can be confusing.
Well, I went for both the eyes before I went for the centerpiece. And once you kill both eyes, he starts moving and he crushes you to death. What you're supposed to do is just leave the eyes alone and destroy the centerpiece, which I then did with spells, and he died in seconds.
Yeah, or just have like the right amount of DPS, and then you're just like, yeah, whatever.
See, that's one of my turnoff with this game too. Like, I remembered it. I'm used to it, but I still don't like the whole system of after you hit, you have to wait for your bar to get back to 100%, or you do nothing. I mean, yes, you can hold it down and charge it, which I still have the time. I've beaten this game twice. I played this game multiple times throughout my life. I still never charge. I just get the one charge, 100% hit, and that's it. I never use more.
The charge up attacks can be handy. There's some enemies in like the mid and parts of the late game that, unless you have a really high attack, you need to charge up against them. But in general, you don't need to worry about it.
Kyle, what were you going to say?
But the charge attacks do come in handy so often. Some of the bosses, some of the special doors, yeah, have the ability to get it off, but you're just better off spam cast magic 99% of the time. Like that.
Really, oh, yeah. I mostly just spam magic and then hit them sometimes, but that's always something that's stuck with me. Like, I don't know the Mana series very good, unfortunately. Like, I've never played the first one. I never really played much after this. Is that something that sticks with the series, the whole charging mechanic?
Yes, in different ways. In different ways. In Secret of Mana 2, it's basically the same, although one of the characters' gimmicks is that they attack twice every time. In the GBA one, which I can't remember the name off the top of my head, there isn't like, it isn't kind of like the sort of you're not at full power, it's just kind of you can charge up to get extra power a little bit. It's not quite the same as it is in here, where it's like, oh, you have to be at least at 100% to even really deal damage. But it's around in different ways, more or less.
Okay. It reminds me a lot of Secret of Evermore, which to this day I still have never played through and beat that game. I owned it as a kid, but never beat it. Like, you're in the same boat with me, aren't you, with Secret of Evermore?
Yeah, I have started that game no less than a dozen times and have never, ever, ever finished it.
Next year, I'm putting it on the show, now that Secret of Mana is finally on the show, to make myself finally play and beat that damn game.
Yeah, I need a reason to just lock in and do it.
Same. That's why I'm putting it on the show. Because otherwise I won't do it. One thing that amused me that I thought I always had remembered since I was a kid in this game, when you first get Salamando, you go to like this winter town, and all of a sudden you just find like this random stove, and this town is all warm. And it always amused me where the guy's like, oh, why don't you, you know, feed the fire? Or no, if it starts to make noise, just hit it. And then you open it up and you free the fire spirit, and then the whole town just gets frozen. Everybody just disappears. I still like that.
Yeah, there's some oddities kind of throughout the game where they just kind of hand wave some of that kind of stuff away and set you on your path forward.
But it works. Like, you have the overall arcing thing of the Empire trying to raise the Mana Fortress, but it isn't really important. It's just there. I still like the Empire. I don't know, you fight pirates too? Isn't there like a group of pirates that your enemies?
There's that one group, a gang. Yeah, it's like they show up, act kind of as comic relief, and throw a boss at you and then run away.
Yeah,
a couple of times.
Yeah. It's like a woman in the center and then two of whatever the hell they are, repeated sprites.
Yeah, it's just a couple dudes. But, you know, one thing that's always funny to talk about with this game, because since it started, a couple tropes that continue throughout the series is the merchants and how they're always dancing.
Yeah, I love it.
Fantastic. I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're all doing little twisty dances.
Yep. Even.
Oh, you don't mean the purple guy. You mean the guys in town, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All the innkeepers and merchants are always dancing, except in one town where it's supposed to be really sad. Then they're not dancing.
Was that the Empire Town?
I don't remember which town. It's just I just remember that there was one town where they're not dancing because it's supposed to be really sad. I think it's the town where everyone is all silent until you make them talk again, then the merchants start dancing. And
when they're under the spell. That's what you're talking about. When they're under the Thanatos spell, the cult guy that you spend way too much time chasing for in this game.
Yeah. And then this game's version of public transit is cannons.
I never cared for it.
It's just a thing. It exists. It's how people get around in this world. They get shot out of cannons.
Even though
I don't like it. I never did when I was a kid. I don't like it now.
You find an actual train later on in the game. So like clearly they exist here.
But also the cannon, like it's very clear that like you get shot out of the cannon and like go flying in the air and hit down. Because in some areas where you land, if there happens to be an enemy, like in the part of the screen where you land, it kills it.
Oh, I didn't get that this time.
Yeah. It happens occasionally. Because there's always a certain part, there's always a certain screen that you land in from the cannon. And if it can be a screen with enemies, and if there's an enemy in the spot where you land, it just kills them.
That's amazing. I do mostly the combat. Like this game has a lot of different weapons, which I still think are really nice. Like you have the sword, the axe, the spear, a whip, a boomerang, a bow, a javelin, a glove. Did I miss any?
Yeah, there's eight of them, so I wasn't
counting either. Well, see if you guys see one, I can't search the internet because I'm worried that if I do, everything will fall apart.
Did you say whip?
Yeah, I said the whip.
That was
one of my and favorite weapons.
It's not bad. I tried to switch a lot of weapons in this game and use different things. I said the boomerang. I might have forgot the sword.
How could you forget the sword in Secret of Mana?
Because I don't use it as much.
It's literally the most important weapon in the game.
I know. I switched off out of it after I used it off and on, but my favorite weapons, like especially to equip the two other characters, was the bow and the javelin and the boomerang. Those were my favorite to have the other people, and then I would go with like the spear. I like the spear a lot.
Yeah,
I always like the javelin. It just doesn't seem like a great weapon, like practically.
It works in the game.
It's fine. It just seems like less powerful than the bow or the boomerang.
Yeah, but it looks cool.
I love it for sure.
Yeah, my favorite weapon was the axe.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it was easier to trigger its attacks where it swings in an arc, which meant it was easier to hit with. So
fair point.
Yeah, because there are some wonky like hit detection issues with the game, like with where the sprites with where the sprites place, which you get used to it, but when you're first starting out, it can be kind of confusing. And the axe has a lot of its attacks are sweeping attacks, whether you're facing vertically or horizontally. So you just kind of get into the general area and you're like, all right, I'm good.
See, I didn't even think about that. Like, I just use the spear a lot because I like spear and I also use the javelin a lot. Like, I played this game before where I was very concerned to max out all my weapon levels for everybody. But this time I just said, fuck it. And I just kind of like I would here and there, but I didn't try nor care.
Yeah, and then also the axe, like the few times when I would do the charge attacks, because the axe has the ones that like spin around, along with some of the sword ones too, because the sword has higher level charge attacks where like he spins in a circle, he does like a whirlwind, which is actually kind of handy, because then you're just like, oh, I'm just gonna hit everything, and for the ranged weapons, I actually really liked the whip because if I recall correctly, it's the only ranged weapon that actually hits through enemies and can hit more than once without being stopped.
The whip definitely can, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so in some of those areas where there's a bunch of enemies, especially in like mid to late game and whatnot, especially those enemies that split off and make copy of themselves, you can just line them up and hit them all at once with it.
Yeah, I love that.
I really hate those slimes.
Oh, the slimes.
They're annoying, but in this game you get XP for everyone that's killed, so it's just kind of works out.
Okay, that's good. And Kyle, did you have a favorite weapon?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'd
spear more than anything. Spear, bow, those are my favorite too. But I usually just give each of the characters like the same weapon sets or one ranged weapon and then one something else. I'll get and probably the bow, I think. So I don't mix them up too much, and I usually end up playing with Randy anyway. So I usually end up sword spear.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of the nice thing is that there is that variety that you can do. Like, I mean, I got to a point when the attack power didn't matter anymore. Like, I'm like, oh, this is like two attack power weaker. Well, that's fine. We're so leveled up, everybody's going to die in a couple hits anyway. It's irrelevant. And it was nice not to worry about that. Like, throughout playing this game, I kept messaging Blake saying, hey, should I worry about this? Should I worry about that? He's like, level up your magic. Don't worry about your weapon.
Yeah. Magic's the only one that really matters. The weapons only matter insofar as, like, when you're killing trash mobs or just when you're busy casting, the odd times when the AI gets a hit in and it's like, oh, okay. But the weapons don't really matter. When I played, I just kind of like swapped them out and kept them fairly even amongst everybody. But that was just to do it. Like if I wanted, I probably would have just been like, okay, you use this weapon, you use that one. But I was just swapping them around on each character.
Playing the way you want to. And that's one thing nice about this game, that it gives you so much choice. Like, I mean, I wish I would have had friends to play this game with like three people. Like, I have the ability to. I played this on the freaking emulator, so I could easily plug in three USB controllers into a PC. But like, I got jealous of you, Kyle, that you got to have that experience with people and do that.
Yeah, super fun, honestly. And, you know, like I said, play with my wife, got some kids too. So, you know, we've been in one of these days.
I mean, that's one thing special about this game. And you get all three characters pretty quickly. I want to say you get the sprite, the second character by the second boss, and then you get the girl within three or four boss fights. Like, it's all pretty quick that you get everybody. So you could have a full team playing this game. And how many Super Nintendo games can even say that they do that even use multiple, can have up to have more than two players? I know Super Bomberman and this. I don't know of any others.
It's probably some weird sports game.
Yeah, it's like NBA Jam and a couple others, but that's about it.
Certainly in terms of like RPG-ish games, your options were basically Secret of Mana, and that's it.
Yeah, you play Final Fantasy VI with two players, technically.
Yeah, I've done that, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a nice feature. And I know like when I was a kid, me and a friend of mine, we did that, but we just never got that far. I don't know. He was one that liked to quit video games, though, before he got too far. Before it got too hard, he would just quit and move on to the next game. He was notorious for that. He also was a guy who lied to us about Legend of Legaia, where he was over the day before playing the game at my house. And then the next day he comes over like, oh, I maxed out everything. Everybody's level 99. He has all the espers, or not, they're not called espers, whatever the hell they're called. All the summons, he has everything. And we're like, yeah, you cheated. No, I didn't. Like, yes, you did. So that's what reminded me of that old story. Good game, by the way, if you ever play Legend of Legaia or PS1.
Yeah, that's a fun one, too.
I don't understand why this game has Moogles. Like, I enjoy it. I'm just confused why it has Moogles. Like, it made me think it was related more to Final Fantasy than it is.
I mean, they're cute. They're cute little weird.
Yeah, the game developers are way more with Final Fantasy than you would think, honestly.
Yeah, they have the shared history. You know, the first Mana game was the Final Fantasy Adventure. So yeah, they do have that kind of shared history.
Yeah, same team.
I mean, the one on Game Boy, right? Basically.
On Game Boy, correct. That's technically the first Mana game.
Yeah. Because the Secret of Mana, the SNES game, its title in Japan is Seiken Densetsu 2.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's My Secret Mana 2 is Seiken Densetsu 3.
Yep.
Or Trials of Mana.
Yeah, it's Seiken Densetsu 3, and then I don't know the numbering after that point.
I think they stopped the numbering. I think. You got to be careful with numbering in games because it can, especially movies too, it can screw people up to make them not want to play more. Like, there are idiots out there like, I can't play Final Fantasy VI, so I play Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, yes, you can. Just play it. Like, it doesn't matter. So, yeah, that's probably the same idea. I mean, this game does take you on a lot of twists and turns. I mean, it does have I know I bitched about the story earlier, but, like, I do like the way the game evolves as time progresses and the bosses that you fight and the new spells you get. Like, you start off with, you get the water sprite Undyne, then you get a little gnome, then you get a wind. Is he a genie? Whatever the hell the little fat guy is? Sylphied?
He sure looks like one, a djinn kind of.
Yeah.
I still like him. I also like when he casts his spell, you can see his big belly when he turns over. It amuses me. You have Salamando. God, who's after Salamando, Blake?
Oh, let's see. I believe, is that the Luna and Shade that you get next? Or I think there might be someone between those two, actually. No, I think Luna and Shade would be next.
I think it's Luna, Shade. So they each get their own. No, it's Lumina, Shade, and then you get Luna, which is for both, which is the moon one. And then you get Dryad at the very end, right before the final boss.
Yeah.
Or final dungeon.
Yeah. And Dryad is also, the only one that has, dialogue for some reason. Because Dryad is like, I'm totally going to help you. Get me out of here. And then you're like, okay. And then you go into the final dungeon.
Probably stuff that was cut. So I had a weird bug in this game when I was playing this. I was sending in the chat. So and I got near the end. After I go through the whole game, I found out the mana tree is your mother for some reason. Okay. And then the mana fortress rises up. I couldn't get into the mana fortress. And I'm sending pictures to Blake. I sent a video to Blake. I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And somehow I just flew at it, and I don't know what the hell happened, and I just landed after, multiple attempts trying to land on that, and it just kept disappearing.
No, there's actually a certain way you're supposed to fly at it, which also ties into, my biggest complaint with the game, is that Flammy and the overland travel is quite possibly the most confusing version of that I've ever seen in a game.
We agree.
I was like, oh, this makes sense, but then it's like, but then, for me, it was very difficult to actually track where I was, unless I was literally, I'd move a little bit and then, bring up the map and compare it to, a world map that I had on my phone to make sure I was going in the right direction. And it felt like it was way too easy to overshoot. And with the way the world wrapped around, if I tried to do it myself, I kept getting lost over and over.
It was terrible. And the map, because you press the first map button and you get a map, but it's like a globe, and you only see part of the globe, and then you press another button, it has to load slowly, and yeah. I can't handle that in 2024. So what I did is I downloaded a map on my phone, and I just go, oh, I'm by this city? Okay, well, then I'm near this, and then I would use it to get around, because I couldn't figure out otherwise. Flammy is cool, but I would much rather have an airship, in 6 or some other map, because this is difficult as hell.
Yeah, it was just more there's stuff with different levels and stuff and where you can land. It was just I did not like it at all.
Yeah, how many menus and sub menus are named? The fact that you can't just pick a location on Flammy is kind of weird.
Yeah, definitely.
But don't get me started on all the menus. When I was a kid, I remember flipping through all the different menus to get to you have the equip. It's just the wheels. I don't like it. I mean, I understand it now, and I don't really have a problem with it, but I did not like it as a kid at all.
Well, the thing is, even for, where it's coming from, I get it to a point, because if it's something really quick you need to get to, it's a little bit faster once you understand it. But when you're but if you're trying to track your stats or change your AI and whatnot, it gets very cumbersome. And it was just kind of one of those things where, I got used to it. I don't think it was a good way to do it.
You just did an analogy back then that had that much information on the cartridge, so you had to use circular menus or something along those lines.
Yeah.
And again, stating earlier, this wasn't supposed to be in a cartridge. It was supposed to be on the CD thing, and we never got. All makes sense, too. That they just had to work with what they had. So we get things that are a little clunky. I'm assuming Flammy is mode 7 when she's flying around.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sweet, sweet sure. Mode 7.
I have come to hate Mode 7 now, after all these years.
Working through others right now. Oh.
Mode 7 was a thing, though. It was a thing, all right.
It looked cool.
It did back then. It did not age well. Sprite work has some sprite work has aged amazingly. Mode 7 has not aged well.
I mean, it depends. It's one of those things where, it always depends on how it's used. You know, I haven't booted up F-Zero in a while, but I've seen videos of it even fairly recently. I'm like, no, that actually looks somewhat cool. And again, it's also a game that's more or less designed around using it, so they probably figured out we should make it look like this. It's always a neat little effect, but especially when you're looking at stuff that's on the Amiga, Mode 7 isn't even close to that. And I know the Amiga's a computer, but still.
Another thing I kind of want to point out about this game is I was never bored in this game. I always was enjoying the next dungeon, the next thing to do, new spells, new weapons to level up, because every time you beat a boss, or even just throughout the game, you'll find chests that have orbs that then can then upgrade your weapons. And I will never forget this, because this is the first time I was introduced to the name Watt, and then years later, I met a guy that was a friend of my girlfriend at the time, and his name was Watt, and I remember like, oh, he's just like the guy in Secret of Mana, and he looked at me like, what? And this is probably...
Does he have God.
No, he is not. He's taller. He's a pretty tall guy with a fro. But I want to say it was probably like the late 90s, early 2000s. So I'm still friends with the guy. He's actually in the Discord. He should be listening to the episode at some point. So, but that's always been my joke because his name was Watt. I'm like, oh, just like the blacksmith in Secret of Mana. And I'm pretty sure he looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about, you stranger? So, yeah.
But anyway.
Blake, what are some things you love about this game?
I think what sticks out to me is the art and especially the music. I think it's just one of the best soundtracks in gaming, bar none, ever since I've had a smartphone, for as long as that's been now, you know, into the thick of it by one of the main themes of the game has been my ringtone for well on 20 years at this point. I still never get sick of it. I just, so many tracks still stick out to me just to this day. And, I think the unique nature of the game, I was always an RPG fan, you know, some of my favorite games, Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, that's just the golden era of RPGs. But something about the blend of the kind of action-based combat, you know, even by 2024 standards, it's maybe not overly complex and it certainly has its quirks, but it was just different. It was just such a blending of genres and styles that I have never seen before or frankly since, you know, in a lot of ways. And then when meshed together with just the gorgeous artwork and that soundtrack, it's just a really magical experience.
Soundtrack is good. Like I joked that I turned off the music midway through this game, but like in the beginning I was listening to all the music, like I was really into it, but then I just got busy with other stuff and I just had it muted a lot reasons. But like it does have music that really grabbed me too and brought me back to being a child playing this game for the first time.
Yeah, and I'm a sucker for systems, so of course you're leveling your characters, you're leveling your weapons, you're leveling your magic, you know, there's all these interlocking systems that are still not overly complex but give you just enough depth to kind of feel like you're, you know, personalizing your characters by leveling them up in the weapons that you want. Everything can be swapped around, you know, kind of as you see fit. And not only that, of course, there's an upgrade system for your weapons, you know, is kind of simple as that is. It's just another level of all these kind of interlocking systems that I just found just absolutely intoxicating.
It's always pushing that endorphins in your head to be like, oh, I got something. And that's, I think, one of the amazing things about this game. Like, I know I've talked shit about this game too a little bit, but I love it. Spoiler alert. But I mean, like you're always doing something. Like as you're progressing through the game, you're, like you said, getting all these new items to get new that upgrade the systems, and there's always stuff happening that you're just so invested in the game. Like, I mean, in your every town you go to, there's always something wrong you have to go solve, and the game is pretty straightforward. It didn't have too many parts where you have to go, oh, make sure you go talk to this NPC before the next gate will open up. Like, it didn't have stuff like that, I don't think. Not that I was using the guide, so I could have just, you know, not come across it, but I don't think it did. I think it was pretty reasonable for a Super Nintendo game.
There's a few moments I feel like that it's a little unintuitive, perhaps, about, you know, where you should kind of be going next. And although some of that can be skipped, especially with a guide or if you know what to do. Most notably with the sage jock in the mountains, you don't necessarily have to keep bouncing back to him every single time.
Oh,
yeah. And it's a pretty big world, you know, in terms of like once you finally unlock Flammy and kind of where you need to go. So there can be a bit of a curve finding some of the places, because like you guys said, the map isn't super great. And, you know, there's not necessarily a good way to recap. Certainly if you take time away from the game, it can be pretty tough to come back and really figure out where you need to go next.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, I wouldn't say it's too bad outside of a few. One place that trips people up a lot is you have to go find a key from this essentially random kind of NPC in a town that you haven't had much reason to go back to. If you guys, you may remember that. You have to go back to Southtown at one point, which is right after the Pure Lands.
Well, that's that one lady who's like, yeah. It's that,
yeah.
It, it, is the one that's it's that lady who's actually married to like the resistance leader.
Exactly correct. Yeah, she has a key
that
for
got
you.
Killed.
Not exactly super queer.
Yeah, she's just like, I have a key for you, and it's like, exactly. Oh, okay.
See, but I think that was just kind of a thing with RPGs. Like, for example, like another game that I played that I love, you had to go find a key for the sewers, and you had to figure out who the keeper of the sewers was to give you the key to open up the sewers to then get into the castle.
It all makes sense, but just especially if you're taking breaks, the game's not great about giving you kind of reminders or push forwards necessarily. It'll tell you what you need to know, and then you're kind of on your own if you miss it or forget it.
I think that's just kind of the era.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Kyle, as someone who plays you play a lot of old RPGs, don't you, like from this era?
Fair amount, I'd say.
Would you find this game to be nicer than other RPGs of the era, or what would you say?
You know, it's really different. I think Blake hit it on the head really well. This is like the most perfect, simplistic, yet deep RPG there is. Like, nothing in it is overly complex, but it's all just enough to make it really work. So like it's a lot different than other games you'll find, but it's just something that like, boy, it's hard to say. It's like a party RPG. Like you can sit down with people, play it, and that's so not what RPGs are supposed to be, but it works so well in this case. Like nothing is overly complex, but it's just all so intermeshed together so well that like you just can't find stuff like that. It's really difficult. It's almost like a muck with RPG elements, but it was made in 1993. Like that's not a thing. It's just so unique. So compared to all those other ones, like I still just really like this. Like there's no way that you could just not have me want to play it. If someone's like, yeah, you want to play for course every single time. There's no reason I wouldn't want to do that.
Hey, I know a guy, Kyle, that said no to me when I brought up playing this game back in the early 2000s.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Your buddy.
But yeah,
our buddy Brad.
You,
he said no.
You just can't find stuff like this. It's just a gem. Really, honestly,
I definitely want to play more of the series now. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm excited for Visions of Mana.
I forget they're making an actual sequel.
Yeah,
I'm glad. I'm glad that the series isn't dead. Like I was happy when I first heard that this game was being remade, and like there's more ways for people to enjoy Secret of Mana. Like that makes me happy. Is the original okay? No, the original is only on Super Nintendo currently, and then I guess it's on Android. Okay.
Do you mean Secret of Mana or
Final Secret of Mana?
There's the Mana Collection on Switch, which is what I played on. I've had that for a while, and it has Final Fantasy Adventure, Secret of Mana, and Trials of Mana in it.
Are these the remakes or are these the original games?
It's the original. That's collection. Cool. Yeah, that collection was the first official English release of Trials of Mana. Many like almost two decades after it came out in Japan. Yeah, it's just the SNES games, and it's just using emulation. It even has save states and stuff, which can be nice.
You can also play Secret of Mana on the SNES Classic.
Oh yeah,
the little.
I'm just
console.
Always happy when there's more ways for anyone to experience an old game because so much stuff can fall by the wayside and people just will never experience it. And this is one of those games where it's like I think you need to because it's. If you like, you know, it's just a great Super Nintendo game.
Yeah,
and I agree. So I have a question about the ending. So as you go through the story and you eventually stop the Mana Fortress, you kill this giant dragon, which is the same kind of the Mana Beast, which is the same type of creature that Flammy is. Does the sprite dies in the end of this game, doesn't he?
No, he just leaves.
Oh, I thought he died.
No, he's like...
He manages to astral point.
Yeah, he's just like, everything's fixed. And then he's like, and then you're like, oh yeah, the sprite's a boy. And then he leaves.
Yeah, I think it's kind of implied that like magic itself is leaving and the sprite is kind of like made of magic. So I think it might be a bit ambiguous, although the game itself doesn't do a super clear job kind of explaining all this.
Yeah, like because, well, I mean, how Sprite is introduced is actually kind of funny where it's like a scam show. But yeah, Sprite is like a magical creature and who is. I think at some point you can see other sprites by the mana tree. I'm not sure if it's this game or another one. And basically when you destroy the mana fortress and kill the mana beast, it like makes all the magic go back into the mana tree, I think. I could be wrong on that. And then so Sprite has to go back into the mana tree. Then he's like, bye. It's like, okay, bye. And then he disappears.
Okay. Yes.
One of the famous sprites, which I kind of like the slime for Dragon Quest, is that little rabbit. That's the famous sprite, in my opinion, for the Mana series.
Yeah, the rabbit.
Little yellow rabbit with purple ears.
The rabbit, the dancing merchants.
Yeah, and the cat merchant, you know, he makes a direct reappearance in Seiken Densetsu 3.
Yeah, he just hangs out.
He's just chilling.
But, like, I mean, Seiken Densetsu 3 almost literally has everything that's in this game, but more. In fact, it even reuses the sprite as one of the characters. There's, like, all the cannons, the merchants are the same. It just all looks nicer in that game, because it's the sequel.
Someday I gotta make myself get to it. Someday. Any other things you guys want to mention about Secret of Mana before we go to questions, comments, and memories?
Gosh, I feel like we covered the major elements of the game. Yeah.
I mean, okay. If you get a chance, go out and play it. It's available. I'm sure you can find it. And yeah, just it's a fun time. Like, it's overly complex.
You get to beat up Santa Claus.
True. You get to beat up Santa Claus. So much fun.
Yep.
It's a weird game. Like, it's just campy and strange and fun, honestly.
I forgot you fight Santa. All right. I did get a few questions, comments, and memories. First, from the official Laser Time community, from Freddy Barreto. This is one of my favorite games. The need to grind for every skill is the main thing dating it. As soon as I beat it, I became the first on the list to pre-order Secret of Mana 2, which of course never came out in the US, and I only was able to play on the Switch. Recently, I found out the world is so big and empty because this was being developed to be on the SNES CD PlayStation. And from J.W. Eubanks, you can cut the game down to about 20 hours if you know which magic is useless. Make subsequent playthroughs faster. People are ruthless to this game today, but I still love it. It did ruin me on RPGs for a while. However, because it was my first one and fighting enemies in real time spoiled me to an extent where I hit a mental wall when I played turn-based ones. Because taking turns to hit each other felt really goofy and laughable, it took getting into Pokemon to shake it. See, I prefer turn-based to this game. I did back then, and I still do. I just love turn-based.
Yeah, at the end of the day, yeah. But this is, it's just different. It's unique.
Yeah, but no, I've heard that before. People just are not as sure about turn-based and like action more, and I get that.
This came about... around the same time as the first Diablo. So the entire idea of an action RPG like this didn't really exist before. Like, it's like because Secret of Mana, it's like it's pretty close in release to the first Diablo. And the games are pretty similar in more ways than one, although Diablo is a different take and has whatnot, but as sort of like, you know, Japanese action RPG. It's pretty neat. It's pretty interesting.
I never thought anyone compared us to Diablo. I forgot Diablo. I wasn't a PC gamer, so I completely forgot Diablo was even around at this time, in 93.
Diablo got released on PS1.
I know. But didn't, like, the PC game, when did it come out?
I don't remember the exact date offhand, but it was, like, the 93-94 time frame.
It took me a while to get into PC games, and now all I play is PC and Steam Deck. Like, I play this on the Steam Deck. It was wonderful. And from the Giant Bomb Group, from Nicholas Bourassa, I got this game the same Christmas I got a David Bowie live CD, Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust, and I would play both of them together. Secret of Mana is one of my favorite games, love the way it played. From Daniel Morton, I wish I could get into this, but the stop and start nature of having to let your power bar recharge really made it feel clunky to me. I get that. It did to me too at times, but you get used to it. And from the RPG Sanctuary, I got a lot, so I'm just going to read some of these. From James Thurmond, Forest of Seasons equals Stunlock Hellscape. My favorite childhood game as well, though. I don't understand that. Stunlock Hellscape. I don't think I had any problem with it. Mm-hmm. Any of you guys?
Yeah, sometimes the enemies can hit you and you get stunlocked for, I don't know, 5 or 6 hits in a row, but not that often.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it can happen. It's pretty rare, though.
Yep, agreed.
All right, from Jeremy Arthur. He said, purchased my SNES 30-plus years ago to play Secret of Mana, and to this day, it remains my favorite game of all time. From Thomas Nealand, this game still sits in my top 3 along with Earthbound and Final Fantasy Tactics. Secret of Mana pulled me in and never let go, and I'm okay with that. Excellent game and holds up well even now. Man, a lot of people love Earthbound. Well, I know people do. And from Nick Leely, or Lee-I, favorite game behind FF6 and right in front of Mario RPG. Game is incredible. Yeah, those are all great RPGs. From Alice Grimaud, never finished this one, but I vividly remember how real the music sounded for a SNES game then. It's rare that a piano or flute in games like these could sound so good, and the opening sequence of the title screen will always retain a deeply mystical quality to it. Many compliments to Haruki Kikuta's score for Secret of Mana. From Michael Henderson, I actually just played this for the first time a few weeks ago. It was one of those classics I never ended up getting to play back then. It was all right. A few things felt dated, mainly the characters following and how bad their AI is with them getting stuck on almost everything. That was a bit annoying. Okay, I did have some problem with the AI getting stuck on things, but it wasn't only, it's really just when they were fighting too much and they wouldn't stop fighting. When I switched it to run away from all the enemies, it wasn't bad.
Yeah, and also like with that, because I had a couple issues where sometimes I'd get stuck on a screen for a bit, but you could always just switch to the character and then move them most of the time. So I get that, but it was never a major obstacle for me.
Oh, I didn't know you could switch characters.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a big part of the game.
Yeah.
I never switched other than spells. I went in the menu, switched to the menu, cast a spell, and then yeah, but I never played as them actually.
Oh yeah.
Close enough, I guess. Yeah. You can switch between all three.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the select button, if I recall.
That's right.
Yeah, I didn't do it. Not surprising, the way I play games on the show. From Jeff Baker, played this a few summers in a row, going to visit my cousin when I was a kid. I just love it. The music is incredible. One of the most memorable you can hear that picture games from a brilliant era in Square's history. My kiddos have enjoyed it more recently with me, and it's so nostalgic for me. The Mana Beast call and intro music, I can hear them that in my head forever. Is that the music you love too, Blake, the intro music?
That is a great track. It's not the one that's like my ringtone, for instance. But yeah, it's a absolutely banger of a track.
From Daniel M., I just did Overland. My one every few years run on this one. Yeah, grind the magic and just wreck. Great time. All right, from Sure Stefan, I still have the edition of Super Play magazine that featured this on the front cover with the title. It's finally here. I read each edition of that magazine from cover to cover and back to front. I remember all the news agents running out of this particular edition, only finding it by chance at my local news agent. Okay. Oh, from David Morrow, were you able to collect all the level 9 weapon orb? I didn't collect a single one.
It's arguably not worth it, as the level 8 weapons are, generally speaking, more effective.
I wanted to, but I had to grind, and at that point I was just kind of done.
Yeah, the level 8 weapons all have like special kind of like properties, like they do like stat boost and extra damage, that kind of thing. And the level 9 ones don't. So practically speaking, it's actually better to stay at 8.
Okay. Well, not that like you, I thought that was cool that to get that you have to just farm certain enemies. Like to get the best equipment in the game, you have to farm enemies also, which I did not do. I was gonna try, but I lost interest very quickly. Yeah. From Cameron Shockby. I played this the summer it came out. I borrowed it from a kid who lived nearby. I got almost to the end before I had to return it. Years later, I got it on an emulator and the remake on PS4. I beat both around the same time. The music, graphic, story, and really everything gets me. Every time I play it, The Color of the Summer Sky is still one of my favorite tunes ever. Video game or otherwise. I don't know which tune that is.
Off the top of my head.
Okay. And from the last group I'm going to read, from the Secret of Mana group, from Dominic Rose, that soundtrack, what a masterpiece. From John Boyd, this is my favorite as well. I explored as far as I could in this game. From Eduardo Grunge, I played Secret of Mana for the PS4 again recently, and I was moved by every trip Randy and his friends made and every land he visited. I was moved by the make-believe environment, the characters, and especially the music. I had forgotten how touching and sad Little Sprite's goodbye was. Man, that was tough. From Stephen Austin, my two friends and I finished this last night. I hated the ending. I'm going to assume because he died, or whatever the hell happened to him. But from David Amy, funny, I beat the game when I was younger and never really grinded my magic because I didn't really know you could. I knew it leveled up, but I was young and didn't really care or get it. Only when I played again in my teen years that I realized how OP the leveling was.
I could see that, especially because the game makes it really easy to just do basic leveling, but to do magic is different.
I mean, you could probably, I mean, I know we stumbled upon it when I was a kid, and maybe we didn't understand it. I don't remember, but I always knew that we did it, and we were aware that it existed. but I don't think we were like aware of doing it in a smart way or anything. From Sean Leverage, been playing Secret of Mana regularly since 1994. Still have my original save file because everything and everyone are at max level and I won't let those memories get deleted. I get that. And from Joshua Hernandez, the best bittersweet mix, super sweet world and the dark side of Thanatos. I felt sorry for Prim and Dyla, cannon travel, got lost in the desert, and the music. Wow, my favorite was Darkstar. Okay. I forgot about all the crap with Dyla and the girl. Like, she's trying to find her boyfriend that got kidnapped and brainwashed, and then gets used. Then his body's going to be used for a demon or something bullshit.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's a that's a thing that takes up most of the game and yes. Has no impact on anything.
I also didn't realize you can skip that boss fight where you get the girl. If you talk to all the soldiers earlier in a screen, then you won't have to fight the two wolves, I don't think, from what the guide was telling me.
Oh.
I didn't do it, but...
There's two ways to recruit her. I always do that by fighting the wolves, but that's not the only way to get her into the party.
Oh, I didn't know. How else do you get her?
She can rescue you. You get kidnapped by like little goblins and stuck in a pot, and then she comes in and rescues you as you're like boiling and they're about to cook you.
I never knew that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a sign really early on that says like beware of goblin attacks, and it doesn't really right there if you go through at a certain if you don't recruit her the other way, like I don't know if it's a random encounter, I'm not sure what triggers it exactly. But walking through that area just triggers a cutscene where your main character gets kidnapped and she comes and rescues you.
That's really cool. I have never seen that. Never knew about that. Like, I saw the signs, beware of goblins, but I'm like, there's no goblins here.
Exactly.
Like,
what's the point of the sign? That's why it's there.
Huh. Okay. That's cool to kind of reward you if you're, or maybe not reward you, but make sure you get your full party if you're stupid and don't go where the game wants you to.
Yeah, which of course you have to have all three to get through to Eileen anyway. There's a switch that requires all three characters, so you do have to get
them. Yeah. So it's kind of like the game forcing you to have that ability.
Game absolutely right. It absolutely forces all of them into your party.
That's cool. I never knew that. I mean, like, so much of this first part of the game is just in my head forever, I've realized. Because, like, when I was playing through this, like, I don't need a guide. I know what to do, and I did, mostly. It was all there, the bosses, everything. Like, I remembered so many years. All right, and then from Rick Holmes. An absolute favorite. Still listen to the soundtrack. Finally completed a couple years ago. From Chevy Chevry. Pure Land. Lush green ambient music. From Frast Id. Great, great, great game. Too bad the remake sucked. Kyle, you played the remake, didn't you?
Yeah, its voice acting wasn't great. Everything else was pretty good, honestly. So the voice acting off.
Okay, I was just curious what... I was curious about it. I wanted to play it, but I didn't want to buy it, so I didn't play it. It wasn't on sale on Steam. From Greg Nolan, fun fact, the opening scene took so much time to load that they showed the small window and played the music to keep you tuned in while it loaded the full mana tree that opens up something like 30 seconds later. Let's see. All right, from Ben Jackson, I remember renting this game from Blockbuster Video way back in like early 93. I was roughly 16. Is one of the few games I rented more than once. It was so special, I went out and bought my favorite candies, Tartan Tinies, and Sour Patch Fruit Salad, and played all week long. The game was groundbreaking. An RPG with simultaneous gameplay with a friend was unheard of. Character switch up and easy to sit and select on controller 2. Weapons and magic upgrade spells. It's a cutesy, fun game, meaning not as serious as some others, but filled with adventure and exploration. I was hooked the moment I played in the waterfall. The music was enveloping. Everything about this game engineered my childhood as to what an RPG should be. The only comparable games I found this level were Final Fantasy IV and the original Phantasy Star 1. The game was challenging but not complicated. Each boss battle brought a new place to explore, new weapons, and kept the story moving. There are a few games that kept you engaged in this level to want to know what happened next. Truly a magnificent game of my childhood. And last one I'm going to read, from also from Ben Jackson. I always rename my character. Sprite was always Toad. Okay. So, and before we go to Shelf Stacker Box, I want to give out a Steam code. So let me scroll down to my list of codes. And here is the code for Dreamscaper. This is the Steam code. The code is ATMIV57NBY0L8ET. That is the code for Dreamscaper for Steam, whatever the hell that is. So there you go, whoever. All right, let's go to Shelf Stacker Box. And Blake, why don't you go first?
Oh, well, obviously everyone knows I absolutely hate this game. I don't want anything to do with it whatsoever. No, as it's been made clear, this is my favorite game of all time. I got a tattoo on my arm of this game last night. So this goes on the high shelf. This gets a place of honor for me.
And what about you, Kyle?
You know what? My streak going as 2 for 2. This one is one on the shelf for me as well. Fantastic game. Give it a try. It's fun.
And what about you, Ron?
Yeah, this would definitely go on the shelf. It's a fun little romp. Good to just hop in, move forward. Fun mechanics. Grinding's actually fun in it. So yeah, I'd definitely probably go back and visit it again.
Okay, I'll go last. I was a little torn about how I felt about this game because, like, I was remembering. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure how I feel. But the more we talked about it, and the more I think about the fact that I couldn't put this game down. Like, I didn't want to stop playing. That every moment I could, I was grinding, I was fighting enemies, I was progressing. Like, the game blew me away, and I was locked to my Steam Deck for that whole week that I played through this. So this is going on the shelf. I might not care about the story. I might have talked some shit about this game, but I loved playing it. And when it comes to the end of the day, that's what a video game is meant to be. Do you have fun playing it? Sure, I don't give a shit that he pulled out the sword and that your mother's a tree and your dad's a ghost and the world's gonna end. I don't care about that. I just enjoyed the gameplay so much. And that's what just makes this game just so great. So definitely on the shelf. And I am happy finally add this game to the catalog. And Blake, you're a big reason why this game finally happened. So
I'm very glad to hear it. I'm glad you enjoyed it for sure. I knew you. I really thought you would.
It was just hard for me to want to go back to because the last time I played it, I was in such a dark spot in my life, and it was just hard for me to want to replay it. Even though this was the first game I played at that time that got me back into gaming after I had quit for about a year because I couldn't play new games. I had to play this. I needed something that just gave me love.
Sure.
Oh, and I should mention what we're going to be talking about next week. Next week, you can hear us talk about... Oh my god, I can't remember. Let me pull it up because somebody plays too many games and doesn't remember what's next on the schedule. Oh yeah, next you can hear us talk about Street Fighter 2. So that will be next week's episode. Trying to sprinkle a few more fighters into this catalog. Same with RPGs. I'm trying to get more RPGs in. Like, fun fact for those that follow the show... This was actually supposed to be on the show like 2 years ago, but the guest that I had fell through, so I changed it. And then when me and Blake did our interview for the celebration of 100,000 video game memory thing, you had mentioned how much you loved what this game meant to you, and that's what led to this finally happening.
Yeah, that's really cool.
All right, and Kyle, where can we find you at?
Yeah, so again, do work on the RPG Show podcast, therpgshow.com. I think we'll be doing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth coming up in a couple of weeks.
Nice. Are they? They're not a weekly show, are they then?
Oh, no. We play like 10 year bat, maybe.
I couldn't do that.
I've been playing weekly.
All our stuff's like 45 hours plus minimum. Yeah, we'll do that, and then Aiden Chronicles after.
Oh, yeah, I'm curious about that game, too. All right, and Ron, did you have anything to plug?
Nope.
All right. And if you enjoyed this episode, there's over 600 other episodes of this podcast. You can find everything we do on Podbean. Type in Final Fantasy, type in Chrono Trigger. You will find episodes, and you will... So go check out our giant catalog. We also done Shadow Heart, so more RPGs. I know we've done some others on the show, and we're doing more in the future. So there's other stuff coming if you love RPGs, so definitely go check that out. If you want to support the show for as little as $1 a month, we do a Patreon. We do have anywhere from 1 to 2 polls a month. You get to affect the show. You can change some of the things that will happen based on your vote. And you help me out. So you get to do that. And please join our Discord. You will see a link in the show notes. It should be updated. If it doesn't work, please message me on Twitter, anything. I will respond. You can find me on Twitter, Threads, Blue Sky, Instagram. Don't message me on Instagram. I might think you're a bot and not answer you. But I will check it. It depends how you word it. And Facebook, you can find me on all those different things. So definitely, yeah, if there's any issue with Discord, please let me know on there and I will fix it. I also want to give a shout out to my awesome intro and outro courtesy of Helena at Hell Has Fear. You can follow her on TikTok, Twitch, Instagram. You will see a link to her link tree in the show notes. Also want to give a shout out to GamerLinks40 with Bill Tucker, who's been on the show many times, started his own podcast a few years ago. He's currently covering Final Fantasy and some great episodes. Definitely go check him out. Also want to shout out Nomads of Fantasy, Nintendo Main Podcast, and Talk Games Chew Bubblegum from Adam. He's on the show quite often. He's on the show from time to time, too. So definitely go check out all those shows. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Threads, YouTube, TikTok. I don't mess with my TikTok. I won't answer either. I don't check it. And YouTube's audio only, but you can find us all there. And I think that's everything I need to say. So we will see you guys all next time. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.